Hey, I'm Paul.
And I'm Christian.
Welcome to I'm Dying to Tell You, inspiration shared by our mom who is dying from ALS.
There is no cure for our mom or anyone else with ALS. But right now, she's on a mission to find and share stories of inspiration.
Coming to you from Cincinnati, Ohio, we're happy to introduce the one lady we both love since the first day we laid eyes on her. The queen of the Queen City, our mom, your host, Lori.
Oh, that makes me smile every time I hear it. I love that intro so much because I love my guys, my two sons that were on that recording. And I just love that they are always up for pretty much anything that I ask. So I'm Lori. And I am your host of I'm Dying to Tell You. I am so very happy that you're here. Thank you again. So speaking of my son, speaking of being a mom, man, I will tell you that when I was 38 years old and I was told I had 2 to 5 years to live, because of my ALS diagnosis, that was the absolute most gut-wrenching thought ever, was that I would be leaving my two sons way earlier than any mom should have to. If you are chiming in for the first time, and you don't know my story, I am so incredibly grateful that my ALS journey so far has been 20 years. So I am one of the lucky, unlucky ones to be given all this extra time. But I will say that that is not usually the case. And today, I am talking to a mother of two sons as well. Her guys are only 5 and 7. I'm so excited to have Sarah Bennett from Columbus, Ohio as my guest today. Sarah was a full-time school teacher before she was diagnosed and was and currently still is a small business owner. So Sarah knows all too well about being a young mom and having your world turn upside down. Being diagnosed with ALS in your 30s or ever is horrific all on its own. And the uncertainty of how your life is going to unfold after the diagnosis is so incredibly heavy. And I know I will never forget that initial experience with that weight. Once I knew that I had ALS, everything shifted from me to my sons. You know, being concerned about how this was going to affect them. How are they going to manage if I do die in 2 to 5 years? And so on and so on. So this episode, this conversation, my guest today is so, so important to me. And I'm so happy to have Sarah joining me to share about her journey with her two young sons and how she's already making a big difference in our ALS community by opening up her heart and sharing so, so much with all of us. Okay, let's jump on over on Zoom and catch Sarah Bennett. Let's go to our chat.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
My mother-in-law is grabbing my voice amplifier.
Okay. I can hear you fine unless it's more comfortable for you to use it.
I think I will. I have a big day.
Okay.
So yeah, I am going to watch What Happens Live today. And I'm meeting Andy Cohen, who's the executive producer of all the Bravo shows.
Oh.
Like a very intense Bravo celebrity fan. And so this is a bucket list item for sure. It's going to be a big memory for me.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay, well, you have to come back and fill us in.
Yeah, I will.
After, so for sure, for sure. I feel like in every episode, we talk about how important community is, you know, I mean, just in life. And then when you're living with something like ALS, how absolutely essential it is to find people that you can relate to. And I know that you have also done that with her ALS story.
Yes, my girls.
I'm really, really just in love with that group. And I've talked to a handful of them on the podcast. And I love what they represent and what you all are doing. So how did you get connected with her ALS story?
Right around the time that I was going through my diagnosis process was the time where Brooke was sort of exploding on TikTok and Instagram. And yeah. So I found her a few months before I was diagnosed. And I DM'd her and I said, hey, I don't want to be in this club, but I think I might be. And she said, the first thing you should do is connect with her ALS story. And so,
yeah,
I'm a good student. So,
oh, yeah.
And now there are so many women who are in that group who provide resources, make me laugh. My husband and I have had a hard time finding young parents in a lot of the support groups. It's older women who are working alongside their husband in a caregiving capacity. And that's just not our shared experience. And her ALS story has provided me with that group of younger folk who are just sort of walking a different path.
Yeah, definitely something that you're not thinking about. Are you 37?
I am. I'm 37 yeah. and a half. Yes.
37 and a half. Yeah. Yeah. And I was diagnosed at 38. And so, first of all, that was 20 years ago. So I can't wait to be talking to you 20 years later. But yeah, I have two sons. Oh, they are older than what yours are now. Yours are 5 and 7.
They are.
And mine were 12 and 13 at the time. But yeah, when you are given that news, terminal illness with no cure at that age in your 30s, with children, it is a whole new scenario in life, including the relationship with your spouse.
Yeah, it's a trip. We have a really strong relationship and foundation, and luckily we're already both in therapy and on meds and on our own journey of improvement. And Yeah, it's a huge test for a relationship and also just a new way of being in the world. I'm a pretty independent, autonomous woman, and I'm like type A, and now I am requiring a lot of help, and it's a huge shift in what our married life has been up to this point.
Yeah, yeah. You know, being young and being given a terminal illness is unique. And then you throw the fact that you have two young children and you're a mother. I wanted to talk about your experience so far with your two sons. Can you tell me about that moment that you told them? And I know they're young, but this is important. And a lot of people send me notes and ask me about telling children about ALS. So can you share your experience with telling them?
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
So my 7-year-old is very inquisitive and bright, and he is noticing changes. I'd had spinal surgery in September of 22, and I wasn't getting better. And we felt like it was important to say, you know, we're trying to figure this out. We're trying to work alongside doctors and scientists. When I was diagnosed and we received the official word in March, it felt like I needed to mourn and process and be steady enough to tell them, not to say that I wouldn't cry, but I needed to come to terms with it myself first. So although I was diagnosed in March, we did not officially tell them anything concrete until about July or August of that year. And during that time, in that window of however many months that was, we worked alongside my son's therapist, our therapist, our pediatric team, the support group, and I read a ton. So I felt like trying to get all those tools and, you know, what we did might work for people, but also it's your own individual choice and journey. It felt disingenuous to not address the elephant in the room. And so we decided we sat down Lincoln alone because his level of questioning is going to be different than William. We basically said, hey, you know how we've been trying to figure this out? Well, we know it has a name, and here are a couple names. And my nerves are not talking to my muscles, and it's causing these few changes. And I basically left it there, and I let him ask. So, of course, he asked, you know, do people die from this? I'm like, they do, but people also live, and we never know when anyone is going to die. So until hospice comes in my world, we're not having those conversations. I intend to live fully and we'll keep rocking and rolling. So eventually, if we get to that space, we will continue on with additional dialogue. But he was great. I asked him if he wanted to be in the room when we told Will. He said no. And our sitter took him out and took him to get ice cream. And so then we told Will, and Will was 5, so antsy and disengaged at first. But we read a book called Bennett the Badger, which my last name's Bennett, so we thought that was cheeky. And also, it gave a really developmentally appropriate lens that we could recommend to nieces and nephews, or to my friends' kids who are seeing me. And I think anytime we can work in a narrative or a book for storytelling to give them framework is important. I'm a former educator, and so I'm about a supplement anywhere you can find one that is a helpful tool. So we did that. And then afterwards, we just left it super open for questions. So the guidance counselors and the teachers at my kid's school received a hard copy printed out packet from the association and from a resource from IMALS to tell them how to kind of address kids in an educational setting when their parent has ALS or a terminal illness. So trying to provide resources to my kids' grandparents and/or staff at their school. Really trying to give them tools to better understand how to best help our little guys.
Oh, I love that. And I look back when you, as you're talking, I'm thinking about 20 years ago, there wasn't anything like that, you know? I mean, we definitely contacted the school and their teachers, and they kept in really good contact and gave us feedback as to what was going on, their coaches, their theater director. So that's great that it's more of an organized approach and very informative. After you had these conversations with Will and Lincoln, did you notice anything different about their behavior over the coming days, or were they quiet, or?
The coming days, no. But as I continue to physically progress, there has been more sadness, more worry. They've been better helpers. They are more concerned. I've had some falls, and that has been, they're just like, Mom, you gotta use your walker. Let me go get it for you, or whatever. So they are very, compassionate, but certainly worried. And they both express in different ways. Will is more like, Mom, I wish your hand could work. Mom, like, I wish you could be a regular mom. And I'm like, oh, God. But he just wants me to be able to do what I could do. And me too. I'm like, oh my gosh, buddy, same. And Lincoln is more like, what in the heck is this hold up? Like, what is up, doctor, scientist? Get on it. And so we have really tried to direct him toward service and something actionable. So every year for all their lives, they've done a birthday fundraiser in lieu of gifts. And so he's going to do a fundraiser for ALS-TDI. And we talked about all the different nonprofits that he could focus on, but my dude is into the science, so.
Oh, perfect. I love that. And I know my guys, like I said, were different ages, but 12 and 13. And I was first diagnosed in February, but it wasn't until May that we told them. And then the following month is when they went to their first Walk to Defeat ALS kickoff. They were in the back seat of the car and they said, we can raise $10,000 and get 100 walkers. And I'm up there and I'm thinking, oh, they're going to be crushed when they don't get that. I mean, that's pretty aggressive. And they ended up that year getting 550 walkers and $80,000. And now, but over the years, it really has given them a sense of ownership in the fight. To them, it was what they could do to help, And so I think that's really, really important. It can be very simple, nothing elaborate, and no dollar amount matters. It's just the fact that they put their heart into what is obviously important and know that their little actions can make a really big difference.
My kiddo, we went to therapy one day and we went to lunch after. And I said, are you free to ask me stuff? Because, like, you think it'll make me sad? And he was like, yeah. And I said, oh my gosh, buddy, you can ask me anything, you can tell me anything. And I think that was a really good moment just to, like, anticipate what he was feeling, because since then he's been more expressive. So I think making it safe, and we're not allowed to say stupid in our house. It's like a no-no word. And I said the other day, I'm like, you guys, you can say ALS is stupid if you want. And it was so interesting. Will, of course, loved it. He's like, thinks he's getting away with murder. But Lincoln, like, saying, like, ALS is stupid. Why does my mom have this? So unlucky. I hope we can help her and her friends. Like, is singing from that. And it's like, just trying to. I think I'm playful. Like, I'm inherently a silly Billy. And I think incorporating some of that, like, we will, like, Lincoln will have his football, and I'm like, throw it to me. He's like, yeah, right, Mom. You'd like fumble. And I'm like, I really would. And I like throw my hand around, or like, we just like try to not make fun, but just like acknowledge and make light so that it's not this like super taboo, hush hush moment.
I love that so much because, even as adults, when someone is sick or having a really hard time, sometimes we just don't know what to say. And so we don't say anything at all, you know, and that leaves that person isolated and lonely. And so I think that's really important, like creating that comfortable space with children is important, you know, whatever it looks like.
Yeah, I think from like a disability advocacy standpoint, I feel very strongly about normalizing how kids are responding to people who are wheelchair users or who might have physical differences. So I was at my friend's kiddo's charity walk, and there was a little there who was definitely like eyeing me, and I see her and I'm like, I clocked her, you know, I'm like, hey girl, do you want to come ask me about what's going on? And she nodded and looked at her mom, and her mom's like, if she says it's okay, go. And I was like, hi, I'm like, this is my chair. I'm not hurting. Like, this is what's going on with my brain and body. They're having a really hard time chatting. Like, I think it just felt so good to like take the like, I don't know, people are so nervous about like, oh, like, or they say the wrong thing, right? Like, what war did you come back from? I'm like, the war within myself. I don't know. But like, I feel like allowing it to be a teachable moment is like something I feel extremely strongly about. And I hope my kids will do better than I did, which like, if I saw somebody who looked different, I would avoid, or if I asked a question, maybe someone in the store would be like, don't say that or that's rude. Like, I just think trying to identify where we could do better next gen for not just people who have ALS, but anyone who's within communities that are disabled.
Yeah, and I think what you said, Sarah, just being proactive and being the first to reach out and make them comfortable around you is really a good tip, because I can't wait till the day that you're out and your kids step up and they do that first, you know, to anyone, an adult or another child. And they're like, hey, this is what's going on with my mom, and she isn't hurting. I like that you said that. She isn't hurting. However, this is what's happening. So that's
Yeah,
really,
because
really good.
I've also found, I don't know about you, but I know people in our world, I'm sure can relate to this, but like, people don't really touch you. There's such a nervousness about touching someone with ALS. So like, I'm like, I'm a snuggler. I want a hand massage. I want a cuddle. Like, get up over here, everyone. And I think that it's also important there to say like, hey, I am comfortable with this. Even more, I like it. And that's not true for everyone, but like, I think it's probably a shared experience that people who are sick have, that people sort of are trying to stay safe, stay away, kind of.
And just another thing that you can be up front and let them know it's okay.
100%.
Is there anything, any kind of support, either emotional or practical, that has been really meaningful for you and your family during this time?
Yeah. So I haven't talked about this a ton on Anon Pivot. I am extremely, I don't know, excited. Sounds weird, but I'm really excited to tell everyone about me working alongside a death doula. And when I say like an end-of-life doula, it sounds like Kevorkian and scary and like, you know, something that is not what it is. We had a doula for Lincoln, so a birth coach, non-medical support, my girl, and they are all over the country. My girl's in Canada, but they're end-of-life doulas who help you with resources for kids, advanced care planning, asking questions that I never thought of, how to honor your rights, ceremony and legacy work. And I am forever grateful and changed by working alongside this beautiful person. And it is the number one thing I would recommend. She said, you know, you can work with an end-of-life doula for a miscarriage, for loss yourself, if you lost someone, for someone with a terminal illness. It's just such a lovely gift in my life to have found her.
Wow. And how did you find her?
I'm not going to lie. I think the algorithm, I don't know, but I started seeing more and more like people you may know or people you may want to follow. And I found a couple of doulas and I reached out to like 6 or 7. And the one that got back to me, her name was Sarah. And Sarah is my yoga instructor. Sarah is Rusty's therapist. Sarah is drawn to Sarah. I don't know what that means about me, but I'm like, come on, girl. So yeah, we work alongside each other and she really holds space and asks a lot of permission and is a very gentle spirit.
Wow.
And I think we have a really weird attitude and backwards attitude toward death and dying in this country.
Yeah.
And I think that accepting that everyone will die and that it's just practical to make choices and articulate wishes, and it gives me peace, and hopefully I don't have to use any of that for a long, long time. Yeah. But a lot of it is becoming more comfortable with living in the present or embracing like my life now. And I think it's like not therapy, but it feels like the most hard work I've ever done, but the most rewarding.
Yeah.
And I think for people who don't have a chaplain or a rabbi or somebody like that to connect with, having a secular open space is everything to me.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. And I would like to put a link in the show notes to her, or, you know, if she's willing, if she has space. Well, do you think that she'd be okay with that?
Oh, yeah. I already asked her. 100%.
Okay, good. All right. Well, to my listeners, I will put a link in the show notes so that you can get connected to Sarah, a end-of-life doula. You can find the show notes on my website and Facebook page, both at I'm Dying to Tell You podcast. Okay. You mentioned keeping life normal, and it's funny because a lot of the things that I've heard and I've seen, you and I are very similar. And when I was diagnosed, I wanted to keep life as normal as possible. I kept working full-time for a couple of years, and my husband wanted to pull money out of the bank and travel and all that. But, you know, my guys were involved in hockey and theater, and I wanted them to have their own stuff. And is there anything that your friends, your community can do to help maintain that sense of normalcy for your children?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I want to be a part of experiences. I have a lot of time where I feel a little left out, like I'm watching instead of in it, right? And so I think, like, come get me and a boy and we'll go on a field trip alongside each other. So we have the support. It's fun, but I'm there for it. Mm-hmm. I think another thing is to, this is huge for me. I am the maker of magic. I am moving the chess pieces all the time from my freaking recliner to make sure that they have fun, cool, new experiences. Like, I'm doing all of it from the back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think making sure that people in my life, when they go do something that I orchestrated, be like, isn't it cool, mom set this up? We got to thank mom for making this happen. Because I think it looks like to them, I'm not doing anything or I'm doing less, which duh, I am. So I can't make their mac and cheese, but I can do so much to make sure their life is so full. And it's all the like little tiny things. So I think like acknowledging that and reminding them is huge and reinforces my value.
That's important. And because they're so little, you have to remember that. So that's perfect. You're definitely in tune with their little minds and what's going on. And they're so young that it's like whatever's in front of them
Right.
is
Like,
in front of
you can't play with me. I'm like, yeah, I
them.
can. Come over here. Let's do this thing. Like, I can play, just not, in the backyard dodgeball. I'd be the best dodgeball target ever.
Right. Oh, wait till they find that out. I saw something on your Instagram, and your handle is.
At the Ananda Pivot is my handle.
Why don't you give a quick explanation of your Instagram handle, the Ananda Pivot? What does that mean?
So I was a part-time professional organizer, and my handle was the Ananda Edit, which is pare down, get rid of stuff that doesn't bring you joy for more overall bliss. I love yoga. I'm like an, I don't know, I would say like a type A yogi. Like I am into the oldest language or one of them, which is Sanskrit, and Ananda means bliss. So the idea is you release yourself of material things or the heaviness of stuff, and as a response, you feel lighter, better. And when I became ill, I couldn't do organizing in the same hands-on way that I could before. And so I had to pivot or shift to maintain my own joy and bliss. And I intend to be vulnerable and authentic, but like I'm still gonna be like happy and goofy and blissful. Not all the time, but like most of the time.
I love that. Okay, thank you for that. On that Instagram, I saw that you were talking about traditions and how important family traditions are. And I love that because our family's the exact same way, even at 33 and 31. They still want it, they still appreciate it.
Of course.
So, can you talk to me a little bit about maintaining those traditions? Even though the children are young at 5 and 7, I bet there's a lot that they already have benefited from and that are instilled in them because of you working the magic as
That's
a
right.
mom. I mean, I get it. I get it. I'm right with you.
I am, almost 6 feet tall. I have a big personality. I like live big. And so we do big parties, like over the top birthdays, like even before, like I was sick, every birthday is a banger. Like it is over the top. I spend too much. Rusty shakes his head and I'm like, let me live. And so, yeah, I love like a big theme, a big moment. I like experiences. So, like, gifts are great, but travel and like moments are better. And so we lean into that. My mother-in-law is here with me in the room. And for my birthday, I said, just keep booking me hotels on your Marriott like card. All I want is like time and like those moments. So I think that's big. I also we do family costume for Halloween, so we dress like in a full theme. And I'm
No.
like, me being like a person with ALS does not impact my ability to wear the crap out of a costume. Like I'm here for it. And I can wheel my little happy rear all the way around the neighborhood in my costume. I don't care. And I think I like make homemade, this is really extra, sorry everyone, but I design my own custom Valentine on Canva that's like themed for my kid, and I print them, and it's like really, I'm doing the most.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know it's real silly, but I love it. And
Oh, and I'm sure they love it.
they do. They have, I
Yeah.
mean, I'm not like competitive, but they are the best Valentines in the class, so it's fine. And so this year, I worked alongside my babysitter, who is like a family now. And I sent her ideas, and she's doing it. And then we're working back and forth for the mock-up.
Oh my
And I'm doing
God.
it. So, like,
Yeah.
trying to find ways in which to make this work. I mean, I always was terrible at wrapping Christmas gifts, but I'm a hell of a gifter. I love to gift and be thoughtful and intentional. And
Yeah.
Christmas is still thoughtful and intentional. It's in a box wrapped by someone else, but it was before.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really, like, that part doesn't shift.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So you mentioned your mother-in-law, and she's there, and you're traveling, and I'm sure she's helping you in so many ways. Mother-in-laws are great for that.
Wash my armpits today. Thank
Oh,
you.
there you go. All right. In what ways has your community rallied around you already? And what's it meant to you?
Oh, okay.
Don't cry.
Well, I was like, we just talked about this yesterday. I'm like a total helper. I'm like a type 2 Enneagram. I want to help and do and people please and be like, oh my God, yeah, I'd love to do that for you. And so
Yeah.
it has been a huge shift to be like, hi, can you like pick my nose? Like it is humbling, humbling. But
Yeah.
I think my family, my friends, like former students and coworkers, people I don't even know, or like people that like know me sort of, have been so generous with time, financially, help with meal train.
Yeah.
We just hired a full-time, well, part-time for now, caregiver, and we're doing a huge initiative to May 4th. And all of those funds will go toward paying for this caregiver.
Oh.
And it's all about like moving your working body and appreciating the movement.
Oh,
So
okay, good.
I just know like I have, people don't need to worry about me feeling loved. I am
Yeah. Well, love. Yeah.
very much.
Yeah. Well, you give a lot of love. I can tell that for sure. So I think that's pretty intuitive. When you give all the love that you can, you get it back. So yeah, you deserve it all. So you're getting ready for your big event in May.
Yeah, so May 4th is our family 5K.
Okay.
And so that is at my former school, my high school where I taught for 15 years. And they had one last year, and we're doing it bigger and better this year. And it is run, walk, roll, whatever you want.
Okay.
And so we're doing an initiative to May 4th. Trying to gain momentum and having a bunch of different opportunities to support our family in this journey.
Okay, great. So I'll put a link in the show notes to your Instagram page, obviously, and people can jump in on that.
Great. I love that.
You talked about Lincoln being the science-minded child and asking questions like, what's taking so long? What's going on, scientists? He obviously has hope in him. So, as far as you, what role does hope play in your life? And how are you balancing that with the statistics and the reality of a terminal illness like ALS.
Yeah. I say have hope, but take your brain with you. So I am pragmatic and practical, and I am hopeful. And I think two things can be true. I get the numbers, I get what my progression says about my timeline, but I think that right now it's like the most incredible time for ALS research. And I think in my kids' lifetime, there will be incredible breakthroughs for all neurodegenerative disease. And I think I have hope for where it will go. For my own hope, my hope is to keep being my authentic self and being joyful and maintaining dignity. It's my most important thing. And I think like relearning that you're. Ooh, hold on, one second.
Oh, yeah. Take your time.
Knowing that, thank you, I value. Oh, okay. Because my pseudo bulbar, once I start, it's like a champagne cork. Okay. I know that my value is not what I can do, but who I am.
Thank you for that. And you are so much to so many people.
Well,
Yeah,
thank you.
that's obvious. Yeah. So, what makes you most joyful with Lincoln and Will right now?
Oh my God. So he is. Their dance moves are iconic. They are like into Amazon, play this song, and are just free. I've loved to watch them play. They're on the same team for basketball, and they
Oh,
are on
nice.
the same team for flag football, and watching them have success or like cheer each other on or like pass the ball on like a puddle. I'm like, oh,
Oh, yeah.
so good. I love watching them like be so easily excited about mundane things. Like, we should all be as impressed about the moon or a bird. Really, really a good lesson for adults.
They're getting that from you for sure. So I know you've done your homework because you're quite prepared and researched. What has been the greatest resources or organizations that you have found for the kids? I know I've talked to Jody from Hope Loves Company, and they have an amazing program and camps for children who have parents or grandparents that have ALS. And I think you mentioned them.
The first podcast I ever listened to of yours was that interview. Yeah. So I found them through you initially because I was frantically looking up resources. And at first, I will say, when I was early on in progression, I had a lot of nervousness about exposing my kids to other people who are further along in the disease process than me. I was like, oh my God, that's gonna freak them out. But now they know like everybody's journey physically is so different. And now I feel very comfortable to like take them to a walk or like take them to camp. So the camp dates aren't released yet. At least they weren't last week when I got a calendar alert to check.
Yeah.
As soon as those dates are released, I feel super excited about connecting with them. And I love that we can go because I wouldn't take my kids that small without us being there. And I also feel like it's been a really good resource for my kids to have the ALS Association within our like Southern Central Ohio space too. Continue to provide items that make life easier. Same with Compassionate Care. Ron at Compassionate Care ALS is a literal angel.
Yeah, they're good.
And I think when I can receive items that make my life easier, then I can be a better parent to them. And they normalize everything. Like, when I got this voice amp, I was feeling really self-conscious. I was like, it's giving Britney Spears, like, in concert. I don't know. It's giving, like, air traffic controller. I don't know. I was feeling really, really weird about it.
Yeah.
But they sing in it. They love it. It's like a freaking karaoke machine. So
yeah,
they take a lot of the, like, ick out of it for me.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and I'll put links in the show notes to those organizations as well.
Yes.
Yeah. You have already given so many great tips to other moms that are living with ALS or anything else that's really, really heavy as far as your children. What is one thing that you would say to someone who is finding themselves in the same situation as you?
I told a mom who is newly diagnosed this a few months ago, outsource the stuff that you want done, but you don't have to do. Like, do I want to pack their lunch? Yes. But do I have to? No, it's tell whoever does they need a fruit and a vegetable. Or like, do I want to address my Christmas cards? Yeah, I love a Christmas card. But guess what? You don't need to do that. That doesn't make you a good mom to like handwrite it. Like, it makes you a good mom that you are devoted and present and loving. And like,
yeah,
I think get away. The stuff that you love, if you love to decorate for Christmas, which I do,
yeah.
I have my friends come in and put the stuff where I want it and I have a little pointer and I'm like, yeah. Over there, over there. Like, yeah. I did it. I just didn't lift the sign. And yeah. So I think it's like finding new ways to give that away, but you're still there and you're still a part of it. Your value isn't attached to loading the dishwasher perfectly, which I've never done, and now I never will.
Yeah.
Like, I think just really reworking that. I love the drive to and from school. It is my favorite. But now I ride, and I still hear them, and we still talk. It's not the driving that made it good.
Yeah. Oh. That's good. Outsource what you want done, but you don't necessarily have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know as women, as moms, asking for help, that's hard.
It's
really hard. And
it's
I know
rework.
I can tell. Yeah.
It's yeah. rework. Yeah.
Yeah. And how many people want to help? A lot. And that's a way that they can help, you know? So, yeah, that's great. I love that so much. Okay, well, you've been great. I'm really, really enjoying getting to know you. And hopefully when you come back and I'm back in town, we can get together in person. I would really, really love that.
I would love that.
Yeah. So before I let you go, what are you dying to tell us?
I am dying to tell you that your journey is totally your own. Like, we are so not in charge of so many things when it comes to ALS, but your journey is yours. And coming from a people pleaser in recovery, it is your decision, it's your call, and keep using your voice however you choose or can use it.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much. I'm going to continue to follow you.
Same girl.
And you're a good mom. You're a good person.
I'm very grateful for you to have given the time and asked wonderful questions, and I am so happy to meet you in this way. We'll have to see each other soon after you.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Thank you again, Sarah, for joining me. I know it's not always easy to talk about your children and your worry and your big heart around the uncertainty when it comes to your kids. So thank you so much for jumping on here with me and chatting. I really appreciate you. Okay, thank you all for listening in. I'm so happy that you are here. And if you're coming across this for the first time, you can go out and connect with me, follow the podcast, and see who's coming up, what's coming up. You can find me anywhere on social media, all at I'm Dying to Tell You podcast. So, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and even TikTok. Yeah, and if you like the podcast, you can review wherever you listen, especially on Apple Podcast and Spotify. It really does help bring people in who are searching for a community when they're going through a really tough time. And again, I'm going to put links in the show notes so that you can get connected and follow Sarah. But if you're listening to this close to when it drops in the month of May in 2024, there is an event that Sarah has going on in Columbus, Ohio. She talks about that on her Instagram, which is the Ananda Pivot. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes. So, okay, until next time, know that you are loved and not alone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to our mom. Make sure to visit her website at imdyingtotellyoupodcast.com, where you'll find photos and show notes about this episode. If you liked the show, please subscribe to the podcast and share it with a friend. Thank you.